Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, the stories, and the events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Pat Schlarbaum. And today we will be talking about some distinguished residents of Central Iowa, longtime Iowa residents in former times. They left the area and have only recently returned. We are not talking about Norwegians, Germans, or even the Meskwaki Nation. We're talking about bald eagles. The bald eagle we all share as our national symbol. When and how exactly did the eagle become our national symbol? I spoke with my friend Ty Smedes about this. Ty is an Iowan. He grew up on a farm and has since become a distinguished outdoor photographer and author, where he has ended up encountering many eagles. So he researched the history. Let's learn more.
That's an interesting story, Pat. We gained our independence, as we all know, in 1776, but the bald eagle didn't become our national bird until 13 years later, in 1789, and that was because there was a bit of controversy over it. As you remember, there was a certain gentleman who wanted another bird as a national bird.
I believe it was Ben Franklin. His support went to the wild turkey, the royal monarch of the woods.
Ben Franklin's support went to the wild turkey. And interestingly, when asked about the bald eagle, he made this statement. He said, "The bald eagle is of poor moral character and is a sharper." And having read some of Thomas Jefferson's works, I was familiar with that term, sharper. It's kind of a 18th and 19th century term they used, which basically refers to someone who's a swindler or a thief.
Oh.
And it's often thought that in colonial times we may have had a 500,000 eagles in the country, and so Ben Franklin would have seen a lot of eagles doing what they do best, which is stealing from ospreys and other birds, along with catching their own fish. So Ben Franklin knew them well, and because of that he lost a little respect for them, I guess.
That was Ty Smedes, whose outdoor photography appears in Iowa Outdoors magazine, which is put out by the Department of Natural Resources. Ty started out as a farmer and a hunter and told me he has always been interested in nature. He began photographing the Iowa landscape in 1980. His work is also in books published by Iowan Books. One of these books is about bald eagles. I asked him what seeing an eagle for the first time was like for him.
In 2010, I photographed a nest over on the Middle Raccoon River by Redfield, and we put the book together, and it was published, The Return of Iowa's Bald Eagles, in 2012.
And what do you feel, having observed many eagles in the wild? Maybe take us back to that.
Oh, wow. Well, I think I'm probably just like every other American. That first eagle was mesmerizing. You know, you can't believe you've seen our national bird. You're not sure quite how they are going to act or fly, and you're just totally taken with them. I think it's something everybody remembers, is that first time they've seen a bald eagle.
So I even think if Ben Franklin was with us today, that he might pause and appreciate the royal splendor of our national symbol, bald eagles flying freely from river to river, state to state, all across this great land.
Coast to coast. I'm sure Ben Franklin would be real pleased to see how they've returned to our skies.
We'll be right back.
eagles were in trouble. We placed them on the endangered species list. You know, our last nest was in 1907 in Jasper County, and then we went 70 years before we had our next nest in 77, which was in Alamakee County. We knew DDT was a big problem. We outlawed it. But also, we had really ruined a lot of their habitat. We logged a lot of trees where they nest and roost.
And now when you see them over the skyline in Des Moines, there at the Scott Street Dam.
To think that you can go downtown in the winter and see 50 eagles or more is pretty astounding. And what I like to tell people in regards to the bald eagle and other animals is that we had this European mindset when we settled this country that the resources were endless in this country. And if you were a farmer and you had a coyote, a fox, an owl, a hawk, or an eagle behind your barn harassing your chickens, you were going to shoot it. Mm-hmm. There were a million of them.
They were bad birds.
Yeah, bad birds, bad foxes. The resources were endless. You'd never wipe them all out. And that's the mindset we had until we got into the 20th century and realized that a lot of species were really losing traction and going downhill.
Well, I know they bring out a lot of emotions in different people.
Well, I can remember when I first began photographing eagles in the mid-90s, John Strovers, a noted raptor and bird biologist, really took me under his wing and helped me meet some landowners and get started photographing on the Des Moines River south of Pella. And we were talking to a farmer one day about the eagles and how they were making such a splendid comeback, and the farmer looked us both in the eye and said, "And what are we going to do when there's too many of them?"
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for today. and we're talking about eagles. Eagles, are they thieves, sharpers, bad birds, or symbols of power and national strength, or simply priceless gifts from nature? Humans have rarely been indifferent to these large raptors, and we've interpreted them in many ways. To gain some wisdom on this topic, I looked up conservationist and friend of eagles Bill Horeen, who is a resident of Huxley. Bill is in a position to provide some perspective because he's been around. Bill's 97 years of conservation experience. This is Bill Horeen, a friend to bald eagles.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah.
And you were in Alaska. What year was that?
Oh, that was in, it was about, 41 or 42. And at that time up in Alaska, people weren't very friendly toward them. They thought they were taking their fish from them. Yeah.
Bill, what does it mean to you when you see a bald eagle in flight?
Oh, I'll tell you, I think they are the smartest bird we have and most intelligent bird. My favorite birds are, believe it or not, hummingbirds and bald eagles, the smallest and the largest. They do such strange things, both of them. I just wisened up and started watching them. The Missouri River changes channels every once in a while and leaves bayous here and a bayou there. So I was out there driving along just to see what I could see, what I could find out. But I knew of a blind that the young people had built on a bayou. I thought, well, while I'm here, I just about check it out. I climbed up in the blind and looked out, and wouldn't you know it, here's ice, and here's open water, and on both of them, there must have been 500 or 1,000 ducks and geese. And this is about 10 o'clock in the morning. They were resting then, see. Thought, well, I'd just as well stay, because there won't be any action until around 2 o'clock at least. So I sat there, and all of a sudden, here come this bald eagles. It was around 1 or 1:30. Here comes bald eagles. I'm thinking it was a female. Swooped down over them just like that. And they got up a little ways and sat right back down. And I thought, this is strange. Back she comes, shoom, like that. She didn't seem to mind. Finally, she lit on the ice right amongst them, and they moved out a little ways. They weren't really afraid of her. Finally, she took off, went kind of upstream, and all at once I'm aware that she is hovering in one spot. All of a sudden, she dropped her legs and wings straight up, and she dropped out into the water. She worked like crazy, but she finally came out with a mallard hen. And all at once it dawned on me, she was looking for a bird that could not get away. Other birds up there, they knew they could get away from me. She knew they could, but here was what she was after. She brought it down and lit right across from me and pecked it on the head and killed it, of course. The other feathers are blowing away in the wind, and I'm getting it all on film. I took it in and got it processed, and that was a good piece of film. You bet, some of the best. One time you asked me to go down to Des Moines with you at Scott Street Dam for bald eagles. I thought, there can't be bald eagles in town Des Moines. But I went down, remember that year we went?
Oh, sure.
And at Gray's Lake, remember, just a couple, 3 years ago, I'm in the car, and right across the river in the trees, a bald eagle's nest, and you with young in it.
Yeah.
I couldn't hardly believe it.
Yeah.
But there they are. I'm sitting in all at once. There must have been at least a dozen of them there. And here's Main Street in Des Moines. Here's bald eagles flying around, you know. I couldn't hardly believe it.
Yeah, I agree. Having them in downtown Des Moines and having the pair right here in Ames, what is the message that those eagles can bring to us when they're right in our towns like this?
They are... Now that they're all fully protected, they're not afraid of humans anymore. And they know that now, they're protected. Maybe they know they're protected. I don't know, is this just the way they act? I have photographed them in the nest, and something about them is it's above other, any other bird, some reason or other. I don't know what it is, but they show a lot of intelligence. They don't smell their game, they just have to spot it. Yeah.
That real keen eyesight, maybe 7 or 8 times better than our eyesight. Yeah. They can see things that we can't.
Oh, gee whiz, they can see things you wouldn't believe. And that's how, and that's really how they get their game. Indians thought very highly of them, you know. And that's the way it is. And
Yankton people out of South Dakota, the Yankton Sioux, they have a song that, sings... That I was the first to fly above the earth, for I am the eagle, look at me. And in their culture, the eagles were the first to fly above the earth.
Well, I can see why. They just look like they got a lot of good sense, and they have. They're a tremendous bird, my way of thinking. Something about them is very attractive. They were absolutely right in making them a national symbol of our nation there. They are just a little bit above every other bird.
They're our national symbol. Well, thank you, Bill. This is KHOI 89.1, Story City, Ames.
This is Rudy Vallejo from Rock Island, Illinois, Potawatomi, and from Mexico.
Kickapoo.
Kickapoo and Potawatomi. Good morning.
It's certainly an honor to be included with you at the Clinton Bald Eagle Appreciation Days.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Could you tell us about the feathers of the eagle?
Yes. I can, and I really appreciate this time to kind of talk about my culture. I remember long ago when I was in school, going to grade school, and maybe like in second, third grade, they would start talking about maybe the Pilgrims, and once in a while they would mention Native Americans, but not too often. But I always kind of thought, I mean, well, how come they don't teach us more about the Indians, you know? And so, in a way, growing up and, of course, getting older, you know, and getting an opportunity now to do what I do, to share with anyone, really, but mostly with the younger folks, it's just the opportunity to let them know that, hey, Indians are still here, you know. We're still among, we live just like everyone else. We have policemen, firemen, and there's these times like here at Bald Eagle Days, as special times. This is January. The eagles are back now. The eagles are come back from up north there, and they come back down to the Mississippi here, so it's a time now for like Native Americans to, you know, to get together, and it's a joyful time to see the eagles, because we wear a lot of eagle feathers. When we put on our dance regalia, you know, we wear eagle feathers, and so to see the eagles to come back, and it's just so really, really neat. Now it's my opportunity now to go out, like here at Bald Eagle Days, is to go out and share and kind of hopefully educate folks, young kids, on the bald eagle, you know, our national symbol, and to do the eagle dance, the honor dance, you know, the honor dance for our elders, the honor dance for all of our veterans. The bald eagle, like I said, is our national symbol, and all the men and women that have fought. And I usually start the program off talking about the tail feathers of the eagle. You know, there's a lot of significance in the tail feathers.
Oh, very much so.
You know, there are 12 tail feathers on the eagle.
12.
12 tail feathers. And those two middle feathers on that tail are the straightest feathers on an eagle. And now in Indian way, they are called chief feathers, the chief feathers. Long ago, when they would actually capture these eagles, they were given to the war chief of the tribe, those two middle feathers.
Oh, sure.
And so the feathers that are furthest out on the tail, the ones at the very ends, them are the dance feathers. Ooh. And those feathers generally would go up on your dance roach or regalia, and you would wear those to dance. Mm-hmm. The remaining feathers that we have on that tail feather represents honesty, truth, majesty, strength, courage, wisdom, power, and then the last feather represents freedom. You know, again, freedom, the freedom of our country. And so, you know, and it's really an honor. I really believe it's an honor, you know, to be an Eagle dancer, you know. And I know there's a lot of, you know, there's so many different special dances in Native American culture. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to be an Eagle dancer is just it's a big honor.
And, you know, just kind of keep the heritage going.
That was Rudy Vallejo, and I recorded him at the Clinton Bald Eagle Appreciation Day last January in Clinton, Iowa. We are fortunate to have elders from the Native culture here to teach us about their connections to the eagles that long preceded the European settlement of our continent. But it wasn't always so. The Native culture was almost lost, just like the eagles. In 1963, the bald eagle population had diminished to approximately 420 nesting pairs in the continental United States. By 1973, they were on the verge of extinction. Even though specific legislation was put in place in 1940 by Congress, the Golden and Bald Eagle Protection Act did not provide proper management for real protection. It was 32 years later when the Endangered Species Act was passed by Congress and signed into law by President Richard Nixon on December 27, 1972. The Endangered Species Act finally introduced the regulations and management directives that were needed to really make the recovery of the bald eagle and its habitat possible. Recently, I was extremely fortunate to run into Dr. Stan Temple. Stan was a young congressional aide at the time the Endangered Species Act was passed. He remembers this well. He went on to become a pioneer in conservation biology and wildlife protection. I asked him to describe how the Endangered Species Act was passed and what it meant at that time.
Good day.
It is a good day.
Thank you.
Well, I recently retired from a 32-year career at the University of Wisconsin in the academic chair that Aldo Leopold once held. Since I left academia and retirement, I'm now a senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation.
And I understand you were quite instrumental in some of the drafting of the Endangered Species Act.
Well, that was when I was a young graduate student, and I did have an opportunity to spend a semester in Washington working with Congress on the drafting of the Endangered Species Act. That was back in 1969. It took 4 years for it to finally be passed into law, but it was in 1973.
It was my understanding that in that era, the petitions faced with some pretty dramatic environmental challenges. The Cuyahoga River had caught on fire.
In my hometown in Cleveland, Ohio, there were times when I was down bird watching at the mouth of the Cuyahoga River when there was so much junk in the river that we once watched a rat cross the river on debris from one shore to the other. There was that much junk floating in the water.
Pollution levels had dropped to unacceptable levels.
Absolutely. This was, you know, before the modern environmental movement really had a big impact on policies and laws and conservation action in the country. So, right, there was, you know, rampant contamination of all sorts of ecosystems, from things that we directly applied to the environment, things like toxic chemicals that were used as pesticides, and a lot of things that were inadvertently put into the environment, waste products from industry and so on that were largely just dumped into the environment, into the air, into the water, mm-hmm. assuming that it would be taken away.
Yeah, better living through chemistry, and it had some downfalls. You mentioned some of those toxic substances. How about DDT?
Well, DDT was a very significant chemical pollutant, not only in the total impact that it had on the environment, but because it became the rallying point for a lot of the momentum that eventually led to cleaning up the environment. Certainly Rachel Carson's Silent Spring was one of the wake-up calls to the general public about the dangers of DDT and other organochlorine pesticides. But by that time, by the 1960s, there had been a really impressive body of scientific evidence collected showing the environmental harm that was done by chemicals like DDT. It took a while, though, for it to actually turn into some action. Rachel Carson's book was in 1963. The first attempt to legally ban DDT actually happened here in the Midwest, in Wisconsin. The state of Wisconsin in 1968 and 1969, for the very first time, went through the legal process of introducing this scientific evidence for DDT causing so much harm as a justification for banning its use. That happened in 1968 and 1969, and then in 1970, the state of Wisconsin acted and banned the use of DDT in the state. It took another 3 or 4 years for it to happen across the country, but eventually that happened.
So the insidious nature of DDT causes eggshell thinning?
The issue about DDT is that it has several different levels of impact. It is acutely toxic. It'll kill animals. And that is largely what Rachel Carson wrote about in Silent Spring. Mm-hmm. The fact that people were seeing dead birds, essentially, in areas that had been sprayed with DDT. It's very, very sort of hopeful that it really only took about a decade after we banned DDT for the huge amounts of DDT that had been introduced into the environment to essentially work their way out of the food chain, so that a lot of these top predatory birds by 1980 were really no longer getting doses that caused reproductive problems, and that allowed them to start recovering.
Right, so there was the banning of the DDT in 1972, the initiation of the Endangered Species Act that did provide additional protections for the bald eagles, and consequently, our first nesting success in Iowa was 1977. Mm-hmm. The effects were quickly removed, but boy, a long-lasting lesson.
Yeah, and some of those species that were affected by DDT actually did receive a fair amount of help from conservationists through their recovery. So bald eagles and peregrine falcons and ospreys were some of the top predatory birds that really received a lot of assistance from conservationists.
Is there anything else you'd like to add specifically about the Endangered Species Act and what that felt like to you when that legislation was signed?
As a young graduate student, having been involved in the nuts and bolts, you might say, of the Endangered Species Act coming about, I got a very sort of false impression that this was easy. This was a slam dunk. I think there was one dissenting vote in Congress against the Endangered Species Act. It was virtually unanimously passed. It was completely nonpartisan. Can you imagine trying to introduce the Endangered Species Act today? It would have been battle royale. During that period in the late 1960s and early 1970s, under Richard Nixon's administration, we got the National Environmental Policy Act, Clean Air, Clean Water, the EPA was formed, the Endangered Species Act was passed. All of those were passed, as I said, virtually unanimously, without much dissent, because it was the right thing to do for the country.
Do you recall any of the specific wording in the Endangered Species Act that you were most connected with?
Most of what I worked on was the idea of helping these species recover through management rather than protection. Believe it or not, that was actually not the prevailing paradigm at the time. For something that was rare, the solution was usually to heap more and more protection on it, not necessarily to manage it to recovery. So that was an important paradigm shift that was introduced in the Endangered Species Act. The other thing that was really unique about the Endangered Species Act that we were all very much aware of is that the species that would be protected and managed under the Endangered Species Act were a uniquely different type of wildlife. They were not resources. They were not species that we hunted or trapped or fished. They were, in fact, you know, species that, really had no utilitarian value. Mm-hmm. So it could be something as obscure as a snail darter or some obscure insect that received protection, even though it wasn't widely recognized as a resource.
But all connected to that web of life.
Yeah, absolutely. So sort of a prelude, the first piece of policy and legislation that really got to what eventually coalesced into the idea of biodiversity.
And your conservation biology work then in your career has been, it was initiated there, but you've been very prominently recognized, honored, and it certainly is a quite an honor to be.
Well, as I always say, for someone who spent their career working on endangered species, I was able to retire without a single one of the organisms that I worked on going extinct, and most of them are doing a lot better. So I'd have to say that's a measure of a successful career.
Very good. Dr. Stan Temple, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Coralville Bald Eagle Appreciation Days with Karen Disbro. Karen, could you tell us a few things about yourself?
Okay, well, currently I'm president of the Iowa City Bird Club, and I'm also a member of the Iowa Ornithologists Union. Mm-hmm. And I've been birding seriously, I suppose, since 1989.
And why did you want to initiate this event, the first annual Coralville Bald Eagle Appreciation Day?
I was approached by Terry Escher, who is the outreach educator at the Army Corps of Engineers. And she said, we would like to do a bald eagle event. And she says, could you help me put it on? And I said, oh, yeah, I'd be glad to. Mm-hmm. And I had all kinds of ideas. Mm-hmm. And I had been to the Lake Red Rock event for several years, and I was so impressed with how that was put on and how it drew in so many organizations.
And families.
Children,
grandchildren.
Oh, yes.
And what is it that you feel when you see a bald eagle in Iowa City, in the urban setting?
It's almost emotional for me. To give you an idea, I graduated from high school in 1971. And DDT was very, very dangerous. And we'd already heard all of Rachel Carson almost since I was a little girl. And I had never seen a bald eagle till I came to Iowa City. And I got a call from Bud Goad, and he says, oh, you've got to come down to the Iowa River Power Plant. They're along the river. It's a restaurant. And it just, you know, right along the river. He says, there's 40 bald eagles there. 40 bald eagles. I had never seen one, ever. And it just takes my breath away. And when you grow up thinking that you are seeing a bird go extinct, was on the very precipice of going extinct, and there were so few of them in the early 70s, so few of them, that I was just blown away, and I still get blown away by it. And, of course, I have learned so much about their biology since, you know, they have to be 5 years old before they are sexually mature. And even then, not all the eagles mate and nest. They apparently choose mates for life. They work very closely together, sitting on the nest and building the nest. And some of them start very early in the fall building nests. As the Decorah Eagles have shown us so much with that live cam up at the Decorah Eagles.
Yeah.
We have several nests around the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area, and not all of them are in use. Mm. But you will find these huge nests.
Yeah.
But I think it's just exciting. And wherever I go during this time of the year, people come, when they know that I'm a birder, they ask me where to look to see the bald eagles. Are they here? Where can I go to see them? And what kind of conditions, you know? And, of course, ice helps. Having plenty of gizzard shad, that helps. And I think this year we're kind of low in gizzard shad, and I think that's a part of the drought.
They are here. They are nesting.
Yes.
They are a part of our lives. So to
that's
see
right.
them in a city like Iowa City.
I think any river town that has a river running through it, it has something just a little bit extra about it. And a lot of it is the wildlife that you find along these rivers. And birds especially are very visible, of course. But you can look almost over any neighborhood in Iowa City, and you might see an eagle just soaring in the sky.
Thank you, Karen.
Joe Lynch, and I live on Onion Creek Farm, which is about a quarter mile, a little more, from the confluence of Onion Creek and Squaw Creek in Ames. I've lived out there for 35 years and seen an eagle once or twice in 35 years until about 3 weeks ago.
And now you're seeing this
bird regularly?
And now we're
seeing it on a regular basis, and my neighbors are seeing it on a regular basis.
Well, how did that make you feel?
Well, it's wonderfully special. I never dreamed I would see it. First of all, a mature bald eagle, brown with a white head and a white tail, and cruising the skies. It's just a marvelous feeling that it gives me hope in a way. Recently, before the recent drought last spring, I floated the Boone River twice, and I hadn't been on the Boone River in many years, and stumbled on an eagle's nest, Tunnel Mill Bridge.
How could you tell it was an eagle's nest?
Can't miss it. It's huge, awe-inspiring, massive, unbelievable. Perched on a single lone tree bending out over the river by itself in this really prominent spot. It was really something to see. Never seen one before, much less so close. And it had two fledglings in it and two mature eagles watching it.
You were canoeing?
Yes.
Were they agitated? By your presence?
Didn't seem to be, particularly. They seemed to be pretty comfortable with us floating by.
So in 35 years of farming, and now to have bald eagles perching nearby?
It's a wonderful feeling. It just didn't seem possible, and with everything else that's going on the planet these days, that something would be rejuvenating, something would be coming back to see us again. Feels like maybe I'm doing something that's the right thing, you know. I hadn't considered that Native Americans would feel the same way, but of course they did.
The eagles are coming back to us again. This time, can we keep it that way? You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host, speaking with numerous conservationists and citizens of Iowa about the recent return of bald eagles to our state. My friend Ty Smedes, outdoor photographer, points out that we should not take their return for granted. We could lose the eagles again.
What if tomorrow they're just gone? There's some fungus or something that wipes them out? Not just a decline, because we know they have ups and downs. Gizzard shad are a boom and bust fish. But what if we lose them all together, like we have so many other aquatic species? When I'm photographing eagles, I photograph hundreds and hundreds of snatches, eagles picking fish out of the Mississippi, the Des Moines, the Middle Raccoon River, and only three have not been shad in the winter, two walleyes and a black crappie. So what will happen if our gizzard shad population just goes away? Where will these birds winter? I mean, they're primarily a fish eagle. Some people have postulated that, oh, there's enough carrion and enough confinement pigs thrown out in fields and so on that they'll feed on them. Well, I think that's true to an extent, but my thought is, with being such a fish eagle, we'll lose probably 80 to 90% of our wintering eagles. They'll do like that bad winter we had 8 or 10 years ago, when it was extremely cold and we had a lot of snow cover, and everybody wondered where the eagles were, and the bulk of them were just north of St. Louis.
They just bypassed Iowa.
And so if the shad are gone, I would see them just going down to the northern half of Missouri and southern Illinois.
And something happens to that shad population, the eagles will be the first indicator.
They will. They'll be like the canary in the coal mine, won't they?
Doug Haar, president of Iowa Audubon, helped explain the concept of an indicator species. He explained how eagles, an animal high on the food chain, functions in that role.
They're kind of like the famous story of the canary in the coal mines that were used in Europe, when they would take the canaries down in a cage in a coal mine, and if the canary died, the coal miners knew it was time to get out of the mine because there was probably dangerous gases in there. So biological indicator species are usually ones that tell us that either the environment is doing very well or there's some problems in it. It's something that kind of tends to be at the top of a food chain very often. And so what happens is as various products, some of the terrible things that human beings have created over the years, DDT, lead, all sorts of different pesticides and things, as those move on up through the food chain, they tend to affect those top predators or top scavengers, things like bald eagles. So they are a biological indicator species, and they're actually kind of filtering up all those things that we put in the environment. So,
bioaccumulating.
They are bioaccumulators, right. And of course, that's why they disappear. Appeared with the horrendous use of DDT from World War II into the early 70s. So in some ways, we're doing a lot of things better because bald eagles are actually indicating we've made some improvements, like getting rid of DDT and things like that.
Their presence can be somewhat mysterious in that there are environmental challenges. We don't want to just assume that the bald eagles are back. Everything's fine. Everything's perfect.
That's right.
Everything's rosy. There will be future inputs into our environment that the eagles will exhibit,
yes,
ultimately. And passing along this message from generation to generation, I think, is one of the greatest challenges, and yet it's the best thing we have hope of doing, is pass along this stewardship.
Well, and there's no better way to teach that than using a bald eagle as a good example.
They certainly get your attention.
They do.
What's it like when you see an eagle when you with your grandchildren?
You know, it's something spectacular. You know, it's of course, it's the emblem of the nation. You know, it came back from near extinction. They're just such gorgeous birds. And I've found that with my own grandkids and with other kids, to show them an eagle is really something that captures their attention and really makes them focus on the beauty of nature and everything that's out there. And, you know, and we do see them in so many of our cities today. So there's places that people can go to see these things very easily today. You don't have to go searching very far to see eagles anymore. They just serve as such a great educational tool of what we can do when we do things right, of how we can bring a bird back, how we can bring other things back, you know, provided we can do some things with their habitat, with their food supply, with their whole environment. If we can manage it correctly, we can save a lot of things out there on the landscape.
Thank you for all you do for conservation, Doug Hawk.
My name is Bill Griffey. I had the honor and pleasure of serving in the Iowa legislature in the 70s, and one of the things that I was most pleased to be able to help with, be a part of at that time, was the open spaces law, which helped provide and set aside monies, bring back some of the wildlife and some of the wild areas and the habitat for many of animals and birds and wildlife for the state of Iowa. You know, we received this beautiful state. Iowa means beautiful land, and it was a beautiful land when the pioneers came here, when the Native Americans were here. And I've had the pleasure of introducing my children, my grandchildren, to the outdoors in Iowa, to the woods and the streams, the fish, to the birds, to the animals, to camp out in the woods. This is a heritage which I've never found a child, even as a Boy Scout, which I was one, an Eagle Scout. I would urge the people of Iowa, whether they're hunters or fishers or campers or bird watchers or just love nature for a picnic, and give their best effort and to encourage our leaders in the legislature and in the other departments of the state of Iowa to cherish this heritage, to pass it on, and to give it a sense of well-being so that the future generations, for those children who will come and those people who will live here after we are gone, if they might know the beauty and the serenity and the loveliness of this land that we live in, Iowa, a beautiful land.
What is it that you see and feel when you share a moment with a bald eagle and your grandchildren?
There's no sense of the freedom and the beauty of and the wildness that you, when you see a bird flying free like that, it just takes you back. You know, you never can go to another time, but you can in a few seconds sometimes capture the essence of what that time must have been like to be going across the fields of grass and to come across a great river, or to stand overlooking the Mississippi River and see the bald eagles. To watch an eagle fish when he comes down and in that graceful moment grasps a fish and flies up again into the air. There's just nothing like that. It just makes you realize that you are a part of a living biosphere, which just gives you this wonderful sense of being and of belonging and of sharing with all the beauty of the world.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today we have been talking about the return of bald eagles to Iowa. If you are interested in learning more about these magnificent residents of Iowa, a bald eagle watch will be held at Sailorville Reservoir Visitor Center on Sunday, February 24th from noon to 4 p.m. That's a bald eagle watch on Sunday, February 24th from noon to 4 at Sailorville Visitor Center. You can find information about this at iowadnr.gov. That's iowadnr.gov, or you could call me at 712-330-0526. That's 712-330-0526. Today we spoke with Bill Horeen, Rudy Vallejo, Dr. Stan Temple, Ty Speedies, Karen Disbro, Joe Lynch, Doug Haar, and Bill Griffey. Music you heard was The Star-Spangled Banner, performed by the U.S. Army Band. The flute songs you heard were Voices of the Wind and Masked Dance, from the CD Voices of the Wind by Wayira. You also heard an excerpt from John Barleycorn Must Die by Traffic. This program was produced by Ursula Rudenberg. My name is Pat Schlarbaum, and I have been your reporter and host today. We'll close this Local Talk show with a prayerful song from the Yankton Nation, The Eagle Song by Chief Golden Light Eagle. It's a spiritual song that has been passed from generation to generation, just like our appreciation and respect for eagles is passed from our generation to the next and the next. Long may they fly. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio. Mi e toka e a makawa ki e do wam de greska wa e a ya e do wa ya ka yo hai yo mi e toka e a makawa ki e do wam de greska wa Hey, aya, uero, wayan kayo, hey.